This is It's Okay That You're Not Okay, and I'm your host, Megan Devine. This week on the show, a re-release of one of your all-time favorites from season one, Dr. Kate Bowler on the madness that is New Year's resolutions, finding hope when life feels impossible, and the complicated math of suffering. It's a great way to close one year and enter the next, especially if you are not that psyched about this holiday. Okay. Part one of my conversation with special guest, historian, author, and queen of awkward conversations, Kate Bowler, right after this break.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get started, two quick notes. One, this episode is an encore performance. I am on break working on a giant new project, so we're releasing a mix of our favorite episodes from the first three seasons of the show. This episode is from season one, in which I answered listener questions, sometimes on my own, sometimes with a guest. So if you want more of these Q&A style episodes, you can find the entire collection from season one wherever you get your podcasts. Second note, while we cover a lot of emotional relational territory in our time here together, this show is not a substitute for skilled support with a licensed mental health provider or for professional supervision related to your work. I really want you to take what you learn here, take your thoughts and your reflections out into your own world, and talk about it all. Hey, friends. So a lot of the questions that we got for this week's show can be boiled down to one thing. How do I find hope in the year to come, knowing what I know about life right now? These last few years of hardship upon hardship in our personal lives and the wider world don't exactly make hope or even optimism that easy to access. The closing of one year and the entrance of a new year is just not that easy to navigate with any kind of excitement about what's ahead. I always aim to open these shows without being a downer, but so far, I have not succeeded. There are hundreds of beginnings and endings. In any given 12-month span, both culturally and personally, beginnings and endings happen all the time. This whole idea that the year ends in December and begins anew in January of the Gregorian calendar is just one of many transition points. One of my favorite things about today's guest is the ground she covers with her brain. She's like this amazing Venn diagram of religion, self-help, health, kindness, the minutiae of being human, all stitched together with this deep view of culture and religion. She definitely gets what I just rambled about, that the New Year's don't always match the calendar. And even when they do, the New Year isn't always that fresh start you long for. Dr. Kate Bowler is an author, historian, and one of my favorite people in the world these days. She received a Master's of Religion from Yale Divinity School and a PhD from Duke University. She's an associate professor at Duke Divinity School. Her latest book, No Cure for Being Human, grapples with her diagnosis of stage 4 cancer at the age of 35 and the intersection of blind optimism and the lack of control inherent in being a real live human with limitations. Dr. Bowler made the whole country get used to speaking frankly about suffering through her popular podcast, Everything Happens, which is truly awesome, and you should listen to that too. In today's episode, Kate and I talk about all manner of math. And before you stress out about that, it's the math of human suffering. Don't stress out about that either. It's going to be great. All right, everybody. I am so glad to have my friend Kate in the studio, well, studio Zoom with me today. So Kate, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, my dear. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you are the one person that I wanted to talk to for this end of the year, New Year's, not really a special, but the New Year episode, because there's so much in all of your work, your whole body of work, all of your books about trying to live into the future when the present is so crappy, when you know what you know about things. So,
yes, that's right.
Right? Like how do you have any sort of optimism or hope in the future? Now, we're going to get to that. I want to jump right into some listener questions because I think that's going to be the best way to access the brilliance of your mind and your expertise here. So you okay with that if I jump right in with a question?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go.
So listener question number one, how do you accept that you're leaving the last year that you shared with your person?
Yeah, that's right. The second anyone uses the word new, there's immediately the knowledge that we have to then move on without maybe the life we thought we'd be or the person we thought we would have. I think that's such a gorgeous, honest thing to say, because with all the focus on New Year's resolutions and like 20, you know, it's always like, next year's going to be the best year yet. Right. And for many of us, especially when it comes to love, is like, so for that love, there needs to be a moment to acknowledge that sometimes the best days of that love are behind us. It reminds me of some of the people I've met who create almost like a funeral for the year, for the thing that came before. Sometimes it was the person that they were, the love that they had, but just something that honors the immensity of being, feeling like you're like filled to the brim of details of something you're scared about forgetting, just being honest about those fears. Like maybe I'm scared of starting something new because I don't want to let go.
I love that idea of having a funeral or having some sort of ceremony to mark the end of the form of relatedness that came before.
Yeah, maybe it's not just like the countdown to the new year, but just having a moment to count down the one that's just coming to a close. Mm-hmm. You're right. I think we have this aggressive futurism that prevents us from being honest.
Aggressive futurism is a fantastic way of looking at it. Yeah. There's a word I want to pick up on in this listener question. They write, how do you accept that you're leaving the last year you shared with your person? And I think this is a really good one, because in your books and on your Instagram, you touch on acceptance a lot. So can you talk to me about your relationship with acceptance?
Oh, it's horrible. Honestly, I am. Acceptance is truly a nightmare. I've been living with incurable cancer for a long time, longer than I wanted to. And I kept thinking that life was going to be a series of challenges that I would overcome and then I could put things behind me. But part of trying to figure out how to live, it seems, is figuring out what maybe just to have a thicker category for acceptance, to have almost like a higher tolerance for the uncertainty of having things that I love that I can't get back to, and not ever going back to that like durable, indestructible vision of myself I thought I would have. So I was diagnosed when I was 35 and I am 41, and I feel so grateful every time I hit a new year. But at the same time, I need a minute to think, what are the things I cannot change? It's that gorgeous serenity prayer. But then how can I find like a little bit of traction, a little bit of like change, wiggle, ability to move? Because gosh, I'm not fully built for acceptance. I need a little bit of something that I can like totally kick the dust off of and move around.
And I think in a lot of ways, we weaponize acceptance, right? It's applied from the outside as this end goal that you need to get to in order to be palatable to the others around you. Like you just need to accept that there are some things that your body can't do anymore.
Yeah, screw that. Really? No, I spend most of my energy trying to not accept most things because I mean, I think that living, at least for me, when I think about the context of like, I'm a professor, so I have to figure out how to keep changing and moving forward. I've got complicated medical care in which I very frequently have to yell at people when I'd rather use my nice indoor voice. And like, if I don't constantly push against acceptance, it goes into stagnation and despair. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes not accepting things has been a really important part of me staying alive and also just learning how to evolve and change because I'll never get to be the person I was before.
Yeah. Some things are unacceptable, right?
Yeah, yes.
I love how you paired that though, Kate, that like acceptance in some ways is giving up and being passive, like sort of pitting it against self-advocacy, right? Mm-hmm. Just as you said right there, like with my medical needs, I can't just accept that this is my condition and this is what needs to happen, that I need to ferociously advocate for myself. And sometimes that feels the opposite of acceptance. I'm a bigger fan of allowing rather than acceptance because I think acceptance comes with this connotation that you're cool with it, right? If we go back to our question, our listener question here, how do I accept that I'm leaving the last year I shared with my person? So the understory there is that their person died in 2021 and we're facing a new year without this person. How do I accept that I'm leaving that year? Well, some things are unacceptable. It's not okay.
Yes.
You don't have to be quote unquote good with that in order to be healthy and human and doing grief.
Yes,
well.
That's right. It's like so much of the experiment, right? Is just living with unacceptable truths.
Yeah.
What a strange thing. I always love it when people say that. There's that lovely quote from, is it the mayor of Easttown? It's the Kate Winslet character. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, at some point, like you don't, I don't know if she said you don't accept it, but it's like, but at some point you just have to put groceries in the fridge. It didn't have that sort of like shiny neo-Buddhist, everything is fine with me, I am the ocean kind of quality about right. it. It's a stubbornness to that that I really respect.
Yeah. Stay tuned for more coming up right after this break.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, before we get back to this week's guest, I want to talk with you about exploring your losses through writing. There are lots of grief writing workshops out there with prompts like, tell us about the funeral, that sort of thing. My 30-day Writing Your Grief course is not like that. The prompts are deeper, they're more nuanced, they're designed to get you into your heart and into your own actual story. Now, writing isn't going to cure anything, but it can help you hear your own voice, and that is incredibly powerful. You can read all about the Writing Your Grief course at refugeingrief.com/WYG. That is WYG for Writing Your Grief. You can see a sample prompt from the course and get writing your own words in minutes. My 30-day Writing Your Grief course is still one of the best things I've ever made for you. Come join more than 10,000 people who have taken the Writing Your Grief course, refugeingrief.com/WYG, or you can find the link in the show notes.
So there's a related question that kind of goes back to what you were talking about with marking the end of one period before you enter the next period. And so the next question, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's going to sound almost like the first question, but there's a slight angle change here. So question two, how do you go into a new year knowing that your person won't be there for it? If my person died this year, now I have to start saying they died last year, and it makes them feel so far away from me. So something kind of inherent in that question is the passage of time that gets sort of crystallized once we switch from December 31st to January 1st. Like, now I have to say my person died last year. Or if your person died in 2020, you can't say they died last year anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of gets to the math of suffering that gets applied to all those of us who suffer, which is that there's a kind of a rough calculation in the listener. It's like when someone says how someone died, you're like, well, how old were they? Like immediately there's a sense that our grief is rendered invalid with the passage of time, or our love doesn't sometimes even increase and our grief increase over the course of, so that I do feel like there's with the passage of time comes the feeling of needing to justify either moving on or whatever that means, or not moving on and whatever that means to an audience. And there's a jury out there who gets to decide. And I have not found that there is a really easy way to describe what suffering has meant over time. Like even if I just said, oh, I was diagnosed 6 years ago, truth is it was 3 years after that. That was probably the worst moment of my life. You know, it wasn't the diagnosis. It was the facing a different life or death surgery and trying to still have problems that made sense to anyone after they thought that it was all over by then. And so I'm like a big fan of bad math, like where we just assume we can't add up other people's lives because I know I can't.
I love that. I remember that was actually a line in your new book that stood out to me when I was rereading it again yesterday, the Math of Suffering. Right. It's such a beautiful way of looking at it, because you're right. Like, the inherent in this question that this listener sent in was, I'm going to have to start defending the fact that I miss them, or that I am, quote unquote, still grieving, because I'm not going to be able to say, oh, it was just earlier this year that they died, or it was just last year that they were here. There is this judgment that enters the chat at the change of the year. Right.
Yeah.
And I really love what you just said there about, I'm going to commit myself to bad math. I just paraphrased what you said, but as a person who has a hard time with math in general, I kept thinking like, ooh, we need a new applied mathematics, the mathematics of suffering, that only the person at the center of that equation is the one that gets to say what time means or what suffering means. and how we judge that. Because there is so much judgment about how you're suffering, how much you should be suffering, what the worst times were for you. It's really interesting that you brought that part up, that, you know, when you tell your story, diagnosed 6 years ago with cancer, and people are like, oh, that must have been such a terrible time for you. And what you just shared was that actually that sucked, and my equation of suffering actually had a different high point.
I think too, the part of the fear, at least for me, of having someone who's had a chronically a chronically terrible life is that it's just that the more things happen, you know, the more that there's this kind of creeping fear that if people don't understand, then I'll be left alone. If people don't understand, I won't have the community and the support and the friendship. Like, if I can't make other people understand my suffering math, then I'm no longer translatable as lovable, carryable, intelligible. Then you get untranslated in a way. And it's been hard to manage the fear that persistent suffering creates. And that's something I recognize in other people, is the feeling untranslatable anymore.
It makes me think of survival as mammals. I know that you can hang with my tangents here.
I'm really into it already.
Right?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. So while you're describing like this fear of being untranslatable, that I'm going to have to explain what it's like to be me clearly enough so that people stay with me, mm-hmm. that drive for connection and being seen. It is so fundamental to our existence as human animals. This is why excommunication is such a powerful tool. If you look at, you're going to know this one better than I do with your history and your background. Which ones, Kate, are the tradition on the East Coast where the whole community gathers around you, and if you've done something wrong?
I'm thinking about shunning. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you describe shunning for folks who don't know what I'm rambling about here? Describe shunning for me, Kate.
Well, it is a powerful tool of social cohesion and lack thereof, where if someone violates like a sacred or special tenet of the community, that they will be kind of exiled by no one acknowledging or speaking to them. And so, like, I have a family member who was shunned for having an organ at her wedding that I went to in a service that prohibited musical instruments, which is very funny now, but was very sad at the time. But it's the ability to render somebody invalid by not socially seeing them.
And it's really, really powerful because we need each other. So, and that shunning that we're talking about, it belongs to specific spiritual and religious traditions, but you can also find it showing up in pop culture. Totally outing my nerd here, but I believe on one of the Star Trek shows, gosh, I'm going to get so many messages about this for not knowing which part of
trivia,
the Star
Trek trivia.
Right? Which Star Trek trivia I'm quoting here. Apologies. My brain is full, everybody. But there is an episode where I believe it's a Klingon shunning excommunication thing where like the person who did the socially unacceptable thing stands in the middle and everybody makes a circle, looks the person in the eye, and then crosses their arms in front of their chest and turns their back.
Mm.
Right? That's what I think of when I think about shunning used as communal operational force, right? Like
yeah.
This is how we keep people performing the way that we want them to perform. And what you described in talking about, like, I want my suffering to be translatable. I need people to hear me and understand me and see me, because if you can't understand me, then I lose connection and community. And if I can't be translated, I can't be seen.
Yeah.
And that is its own form of sort of communal shunning.
I think that's why, as a historian, I got so excited about sort of studying religious and cultural cliches, because I think that was exactly the reason why I found them so interesting. Was it felt like if I can study the cultural scripts, like the stories people tell about suffering, like, you know, everything happens for a reason, or, you know, God never gives you more than you can handle, that kind of thing. If I understand the script, then at least I understand when I'm off script, because I have felt, I've just, you know, having
a chronic problem. I have found that so little of it actually creates the kind of social understanding that I'm looking for. If I say something like, oh yeah, it's pretty terrible and it's pretty much stayed pretty awful. There's really no, it doesn't suit the American culture of optimism. It doesn't give anyone the cultural exit ramp that they're looking for. I think social cohesion and cultural scripts tell us a lot about when we're in and when we're out.
Yeah.
Because we certainly feel it when we're out.
Yeah. And I think the temptation is to bend yourself to fit the social construct so that you don't get shunned, so that you don't feel alone. If you've lost your person or you have a really impossible diagnosis or a chronic illness or injury, you know you need your community. And the temptation, I think, is like, maybe I'm the wrong one. Well, part of the way that I see a lot of my work, Kate, is that like, you're not the one that's wrong. The culture is wrong. And you and I... you know, work at different angles or different starting points for this same challenge, which is it's the culture that misunderstands suffering. It is our entertainment and the stories that we tell ourselves and what we believe is the most helpful thing to do for somebody when they're suffering. That's where the problem is. It's not in this person who asked this question about, you know, how do I go into a new year knowing that this is a year my person will never see. The implications or the connotations inside that is like, I'm going to have to justify this. And I think this also, what we were just discussing, also points to why it feels so important for people to justify their right to suffer or their right to be in pain or their right to be having a hard time that doesn't match the Disney stereotype or the, you know, you got through the, like, that transformation narrative, right? You and I have yakked about this before, that transformation narrative before, where, like, if you do your suffering correctly, then you come back a bigger, stronger, wiser person and the bluebirds fly from your brain and everything works out exactly as it should. And I think we know that that's not true. And that need to explain our suffering, translate our suffering. I love that phrase that you used to talk about that. We feel like we're failing a cultural script and we're going to be left even more alone. But we also know that we need to tell the truth about our own experience.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Yes. So that's an interesting point of discomfort culturally, personally, and professionally.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Trying to rewrite those scripts. And it really does take more people willing to tell the truth about their math suffering, their suffering of, I mean, you said it so much better and I can't remember what it was, but it was awesome. it really does take people talking about the reality of suffering.
Yeah.
To start changing those bigger conversations so that we don't feel like our math is getting questioned every time we turn around and every time there's a year change.
That's right.
This is just the first half of my conversation with Kate Bowler. We had so much fun talking together. And yes, we had fun talking about this really serious stuff. That's what we do together. This conversation was so much fun and so interesting and had so much useful stuff in it. We decided to split it into two parts. This is part one. Part two is coming your way next week. Don't miss it, friends.
You know how most people are going to scan through the show description here and think, I do not want to talk about all that pain stuff? Well, here's where you come in. Your reviews let people know it really isn't all that bad in here. We talk about heavy stuff, but it's in the service of making things better for everyone. So everyone should listen. Spread the word in your workplace, in your social world, on social media, and click through to leave a review. Subscribe to the show, download episodes, and send in your questions. Want more hereafter? Grief education doesn't just belong to end-of-life issues. Life is full of losses, from everyday disappointments to events that clearly divide life into before and after. Learning how to talk about all that without cliches or platitudes or simplistic think positive workplace posters, that's an important skill for everyone. Find trainings, workshops, books, and resources for every human trying to make their way in the world after something goes horribly wrong at megandevine.co. Hereafter with Megan Devine is written and produced by me, Megan Devine. Executive producer is Amy Brown, co-produced by Elizabeth Fazio, edited by Houston Tilley, and music provided by Wave Crush.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.